Welcome to La Liga Weekly. I think we've discovered this season is the best thing for a manager of Barcelona to be is unable to speak Spanish. Hansi Flick remains immune to all the advice and his young team are cutting a swathe through La Liga. The big test is this week, though. How will that Germanic high line stand up against the pace of Bayern Munich and Real Madrid? No offence to Harry Kane. I didn't mean to call him fast. There were signs of tension at Real Madrid with Jude Bellingham furious that Vinicius didn't pass him the ball. Los Blancos put in another chaotic performance away to Celta, suffered more injuries, and they won again, unbeaten, 3 points behind Barcelona, somehow. Now explain this one to me. It's the El Clasico next weekend, and once again, Barcelona and Real Madrid are both qualified. Football is so fixed. Specifically this week, it's fixed in favour of Getafe and Valladolid. Who saw that coming? I wonder how they feel in the football units of the Illuminati. In the glory days, they were staging the moon landings. Now all they've got to do is give a dodgy penalty against John Guridi. Our Patreon, Richard Cosmala, asks the not unreasonable question, how do La Liga players stay calm when the decisions are as bad as they've been this weekend? The answer is basic oppression. No one is oppressing Chimi Ávila, by the way. He fulfilled the brief and celebrated his winner for Betis in Pamplona. What did the Osasuna fans expect? Level-headed diplomacy from Chimi. Congratulations to Diego Simeone for passing 1,000 points as a manager in La Liga, one for each in-game tactical tweet. Weak was the word I was looking for. Right. Talking of hectic, chaotic, Terry Gibson's weekend involved his own personal classico of Real Madrid. Real Madrid in this is the world for you, isn't it? Real Madrid in Barcelona, then back to London to do the Barcelona game. Yes.
Come train from Baidos from Vigo.
Yeah.
From the studio in Barcelona, then 6:15 a.m. for 4:15 a.m. taxi from the airport, from my hotel to the airport, 6:15 flight, back in bed at 8:30 in the morning, and then off to Ealing to come take on Barcelona against Sevilla's. A weird world we live in. But
yes. But so you're not in the car park at the Bernabeu next week for the coverage of the Clásico.
Well, I don't. La Liga TV, like every other media outlet, are not allowed to broadcast from inside the Bernabeu. It's so. I think all coverage next week on La Liga TV is from the studio in Barcelona. Because it's too hectic. For you're not allowed in until 10 minutes before kickoff.
That's just extraordinary, isn't it? So if you didn't hear all this, we were talking to Jamie Easton about this last week. So go back, not right now. Listen to this one, and then go back and listen to last week. It was a good chat with Jamie. But it's weird, isn't it? The Real Madrid are sort of banning their own, because La Liga TV is the world feed, so banning their own world feed from.
I think it's all media outlets as well. I don't think it's just La Liga TV. I think it is everybody.
Yeah.
They're at war with La
everybody.
Liga. Yeah. Tebas and Florentino Perez, I think, are always at loggerheads. And this is it's been going on for a second year, I think, now. So we don't get any dressing room shots. We weren't allowed the drinks break, managers, you know, when they have the little conference with the players, that wasn't allowed. There's no flash interviews after the game with a Real Madrid player. I think their reasoning is they're keeping it for Real Madrid TV until they get what they want. And I'm not sure what they want. when you see the Matt Cannon, who is the recent addition to La Liga TV, when he's at the stadiums, he's pitch side, we get updates during the day, like on Saturday for the late game. We would have gone to him in the middle of the Girona Real Sociedad game, which was the game that preceded that, and we'd have had a report on what's happening at the, you know.
Yeah, to be fair, the answer is always nothing. I'm not a big fan of all that go to a ground when there's no one there thing, but
it fills time. It tries to give them a little bit of a flavour of the atmosphere, the build up to the, you know, stadium, but Matt, whoever's doing it, is not allowed in the stadium. So it's invariably from a car park outside, stadium in the background and stuff like that. And then a mad rush 10 minutes before kickoff to get your
report. See, that's the unfair bit. It's unfair on the reporter to be in. So when are you? That's not any kind of preparation. That's almost just personal against the reporter. Because you can say, come in a bit early. It's like giving the teams out as late as clubs do. And that's part of the regulations. Just give everyone the teams earlier.
Yeah.
And then it's not such a big rush and a big panic before the game. I've done my fair share of reporting from car parks. When I used to work at TalkSport, they had this thing about sending me, particularly for a while, to a stadium, like during the breakfast show. And I mean, what's happening? Like, what do you think is happening outside a football stadium at 7 o'clock in the morning? Nothing. There's nobody here. There will be in 12 hours' time, but right now, nothing is happening. Yeah. We need to talk about the football, Terry. Shall we talk about Real Madrid first? They, like I said in the intro, they're 3 points behind Barcelona. So it feels like you're nitpicking when you're criticising, but so many of their games are pretty unconvincing, aren't they? And they're finding ways to win is the positive way to look at it. And that's football.
Exactly. I mean, it is. I checked yesterday when, is it only a 3-point gap? Because there must be more than that, because Real Madrid have dropped points. They drew Atletico Madrid, which isn't a disappointing result. They were 1-0 ahead. But they've drawn at Las Palmas, drawn at Mallorca. I looked at their away form. They've lost at Lille as well in the Champions League. So, and then I checked, but they're only 3 points and level going into the game for Barcelona last night. They were level with Barcelona. But it is that they're stumbling through and they are undermanned, I have to be honest. I mean, Militao had a couple of times in the first half where he went down holding his left knee. He was hobbling, he was limping. There wasn't an obvious injury. It wasn't a kick. It wasn't an impact. It was he was stretching in challenges. And you think, well, if he gets injured or if he's, you know, uncomfortable to play the next game, for instance, where, you know, they've got Dortmund this week, they've got a real problem. So they're just a lacking numbers. You're looking at the Celta squad, they had the full complement of subs, Real Madrid didn't. And I do find it baffling that we're comparing Real Madrid and Barcelona. Barcelona keep finding these young players. And Real Madrid haven't got any. We never see the, you know, looking at the young players that come through the squad and at the moment, it's probably Lucas Vasquez is the only one, I'm guessing. Now Nacho's gone. Danny Carvajal's injured. I'm trying to think of any others that make the breakthrough from the Cantera. There isn't any. There's not even any on the bench. Jesus Vallejo is the replacement. They brought him from Zaragoza. So I would have thought that Real Madrid should have the best of the best in terms of young players in Spain. They probably bought players from abroad as well to play in their B team and Cantera teams. I'm baffled as to why they can't find a young 18, 19, 20-year-old Real Madrid defender that's come through the system that can play at centre-back or right-back.
Yeah.
So it is, when you look at how they were playing, how they were lining up the other night, it is an issue that they probably do just need more players.
Yeah. And I've got to say, you know, blowing our trumpet, we've been saying this. This is not a surprise. They're literally short of, and it seems such a basic thing to almost apologise for saying it. Just like, you're just short of actual defenders.
Exactly. I mean, looking at the bench the other night, you've got Rodrigo, Endrick, Ceballos, Goulart, Luka Modric, who came on to good effect. Mondi was the main one, and Jesus Vallejo. So they're your two sub-defenders.
Yeah.
And no one coming back from injury anytime soon.
And because the injury list is, well, Carvajal, Alaba, and Brahim Diaz. But so, I mean, they're bad losses, Carvajal and Alaba. But it's not like that. It's freakish that they've lost six players.
They've got seven, eight out.
Yeah.
Like Barcelona have had.
Yeah.
Fran Garcia probably is the cover defender. Ferland Mondi was probably rested in this game. I personally feel it's a little battle between the two of them to be first choice left back. I think they're both good. But there's, and then you're looking at players playing in different positions. That's the solution that is only available to Ancelotti. It's the only one available now. So I think he shut down a press conference at the weekend when they were referring to the fact that maybe Fede Valverde could play right back.
Yeah.
And he said, no, Lucas Vasquez is right back now. And they said, but what if he gets injured or needs a rest? And he went, Militao. And that was it. He shut it down by saying there's know Fede Valverde. But I commentated on the game, and I was thinking that Simeone had taken over at Real Madrid for the night, because you get the teams, it looked pretty straightforward, and you're thinking, yep, I can see that. So four-man midfield, Vinicius and Mbappe up front, and then the game kicks off and I'm seeing Bellingham playing right wing in a front three, and you're seeing Tchouaméni playing in between the Rüdiger and Militao. And then I'm thinking, well, is he doing that, you know, like the hybrid central midfielder that drops in between, like Busquets used to do when they're in possession of the ball? But no, he was there all the time, and Rüdiger and Militao were 50 metres apart. And it kept changing. And then Ancelotti was getting on the touchline and calling Tchouaméni in particular over, giving him more instructions. And then next thing you know, you saw Bellingham playing left wing, and then he was back in midfield, then he was back on the right wing. And kind of effectively, I tried to work out, I kept thinking, he's playing Vinicius wide left, Mbappe out front, Bellingham right wing. And that was the case. I mean, his average position is right-sided. Normally you think of him playing very central, just high up the pitch, or very left-sided. And it was baffling to see him playing in that position. And I was fascinated to see why. And then Ancelotti said after the game, he wanted a big player to be playing in that position. So we've had Ancelotti saying that Fede Valverde was taking goal kicks because he kicks the ball the longest, particularly last season when Lunin was playing. And then now we've heard him say that he wanted the big lad on the far post against probably Hugo Alvarez, who was the left-sided wing-back for Celta Vigo.
Sometimes Carlo should say... I wonder whether it'd be... He should say less. Because when he stands there not doing anything, just raising an eyebrow, he's a genius.
Yeah.
when he sort of explains it, he says, oh, I set the big lad up front and had the lad who kicked the
big
ball
lad against the little fullback. Head on a stick at the far post. So it was kind of baffling. And Celta are a good team. And, you know, they kept making the same mistakes, that whenever they gave the ball away, because they like to try and play, and they do it really well most of the time. But there are times where they get either caught in possession or a misplaced pass. And with Real Madrid not playing particularly well, they still have a collection of world-class players that can hurt you. Mm. And I looked at it and I thought, how many managers around are looking, thinking, if my team was playing as bad as this, we wouldn't be winning this game, or we wouldn't be getting 3 points. But, oh, look, Mbappe's got it. He's wrapped his foot around it and wrapped it into the top corner from 25 metres out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because Celta made one mistake, got caught in possession, ball's given away, punished. You know, and that's what's getting Real Madrid through at the moment, individual brilliance. And it you're right, it's they're just 3 points behind. They're going into the Clasico, they win that at home next week, they're top of the league again.
There's pretty intense speculation about Trent Alexander-Arnold maybe on a free next summer. Are you going for that as Real Madrid?
It'd be hard not to on a, you know, a free transfer.
With Carvajal now.
Yeah,
how he is,
there is a significant age difference, so that they have to be looking at a long-term right back. It's a difficult one, because I'm also hearing that Alexander Arnold, how true this is, I don't know, sees himself more as a midfield player these days. So if he does go to Real Madrid, do they need that right midfield player? Carvajal fulfills a wonderful role for Real Madrid. He's the best in the world, in my opinion. I don't often say that, but I don't say it every podcast. This player is the best in the world. But I think in terms of fulfilling all duties as a right back, Carvajal does a lot. Fantastic going forward, a winning mentality. He's a leader, and he likes defending, and he's very good at defending. So he does everything. The criticisms of Alexander Arnold are valid. I think he's brilliant at passing, crossing. Doesn't have that mentality that Danny Carvajal has in terms of the importance of a clean sheet, the importance of getting back into position. Whether that can come I think he's 26 now, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Is he going to change, or does he see himself as a gifted midfield player that can, if you know, give him time on the ball, he can spray a pass and put in wonderful crosses and score free kicks? It's
also, Real Madrid is not really the place to go and become a gritty defender.
No.
In the, if he goes to Real Madrid, I can see it happening very much.
But yeah,
if he goes there, he's almost a perfect. He's almost like Florentino Perez's idea of a right back.
Yes, Marcelo. It could be like Marcelo.
Yeah.
Marcelo.
Yeah.
It was wonderful to watch, and some of the games he had a fantastic spell, long spell at Real Madrid. But it was always that weakness of you can't get at him, and if teams could do that, particularly Barcelona did in particular when they played in Clásicos, that was the weakness of Real Madrid. But in you know, 90% of the games that Real Madrid played, Marcelo was a strength as opposed to a weakness.
Yeah.
Because he was so good going forward.
Yeah.
So it might be along those similar lines that, you know, it won't happen because what I'm going to say is Trent Alexander-Arnold could learn from Danny Carvajal that you can do both. But I don't think that would be the mentality if Alexander-Arnold does go to Real Madrid. Do you notice that I'm not calling him Trent?
Trent, yes. But
not
also,
Road.
do you notice that no commentators ever called him Trent? There is a the pundits all do. The pundits all are Trent this and Frank that.
Oh, is that how it works? It just drives me mad that nobody.
So the
Trent
yeah,
and
and that is it's a sort of the comment I. In discussions with commentators, people are reluctant to use any kind of nicknames.
Yeah.
The whole Jorginho and Ruter thing as well, kind of just calling it by yourself.
Well, we had a player for Alaves the other night. Didn't play. Stoichkov.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, doing me prep. Well, what's the background? It was a nickname his dad gave him because his dad was a Barcelona fan and supported yeah. Barcelona, and his favourite player was Stoichkov. And
yeah.
I think, well, how's that on your back of your shirt?
Yeah.
His name is nothing like Stoichkov, nothing whatsoever. It's just a nickname. His dad liked it. His dad's favourite player.
Yeah, if you go around calling yourself Pele.
My nickname should have been Greavesy.
I'll call myself Maradona, and then make everyone call me Maradona. Yeah, no.
Bizarre. I made a point.
And also, if your friends,
oh, his name is Juan Diego Molina Martinez.
Yeah,
but known as Stoichkov.
Yeah. If you're friends with Trent, by all means, call him Trent. But if you're not, anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe
see that happening. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and they do love a free transfer.
Yes, and he's a fantastic player.
Yeah.
It's just defensively, do Real Madrid need a right back?
Precisely. Almost. And I know it's a big deal, and they'd have to pay him a lot of money. But it does make sense, just in terms of numbers, to get someone in on a free who can, like you say, be really, really good in the vast majority of games. And does it leave them slightly exposed in the very top games, big Champions League games, Clásicos, etc.? Yeah, but still makes sense.
Yeah. So I can see, I'm sure they've got other players that they're looking at as well. And I think personally, they need one in January.
Yeah.
As opposed to fudging it and making do with, Militao can play there. Yeah, but Militao might have to play centre-back as well. That means you've got to play two remaining centre-back. What if, if Valverde does have to play right-back, you're missing Valverde in midfield, where he's so important.
But they're not getting Trent in January.
No.
So what are you doing in January? Are you, because I still think, I can't think of a name, but a good versatile right-back, centre-back, another, you know, someone better than Vallejo, basically.
And some to share, at least share the playing time with Lucas Vasquez.
Yeah, you'd get a lot. They're literally shorter bodies and they need people in. And it's not, you know, when you're looking at Militao limping and hobbling around at times and stretching out, you think, this is bad for a guy who's been out a long time previously.
Yeah. It was a concern. He winced on two occasions. The game was stopped for him to rub his knee so there was discomfort there for sure. And that is a worry, it is a concern. But Thibaut Courtois was brilliant. So you talk about important players, and Mbappe, Vinicius get the goals. Thibaut Courtois was fantastic in goal. The quality from the finishing from Celta Vigo probably wasn't as good as it should have been from Svedberg. Celta played really well. They created a lot of chances. It was it, I actually knew it was going to be a tough game for Real Madrid.
Yeah, and they got the points. Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah,
You know, we don't want it to be predictable every game. So Real Madrid did get the win. They did get across the line. They had to grind it out in against difficult opponents in an atmospheric stadium. And Celta probably deserved something, to be honest.
Yeah.
They did deserve something from the game. So they'll be bitterly disappointed at a performance that was so good.
Yeah.
Didn't give them anything.
They've got Dortmund Champions League midweek. We'll come back and discuss that later in the week with Patreons. Barcelona, 5. Sevilla, 1. Lewandowski got a couple. Bit of a soft penalty. I thought, no. When I say soft penalty, that's a euphemism for it wasn't a penalty and Rafinha threw himself on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. We didn't get a really good angle. I thought initially it was for a pull.
Yeah, I don't think we got a good angle because I don't think he fouled him.
A knee on the back of...
I don't know. I just didn't see
Rafinha.
I just didn't see a foul.
Who twisted round and suddenly, you know, found himself in a position where the referee was straight there. So if there's... I think it was a knee in the back of the leg of Rafinha rather than... I thought it was a pull on the jersey. But it wasn't. But it was a soft penalty. And it was a blow for Sevilla because up until that point, Barcelona hadn't created too many clear-cut chances, but we're only 20-odd minutes into the game. It was clear the pattern of the game was going to be Sevilla with loads of bodies back behind the ball. Pepe is the player that does give away the penalties, a degree of panic. He has to get round the referee as well to get to Rafinha.
Precisely, it looks like it's a foul because he runs the wrong side. There's no need to be there going that close to him, et cetera, et cetera. Still don't think he fouled him. Still can't see where the foul is.
No. Anyway. And then that opened the floodgates, really. Yeah. So the you know, Sevilla have got calls for complaint. I mean, we'll talk about Sevilla in a minute. We have to separate the two teams. But Barcelona, after getting that first goal, and then Lewandowski gets the second, and they're up and running then, and it's game over. When it goes to 3, that's it, done and dusted.
Yeah.
So it was a tough night for Sevilla.
Yeah, but Barca are a good watch, aren't they? Well, yeah, they attack quite quickly.
Yeah.
People, by comparison, now everyone's hammering Xavi on social media because they do look, it looks fresher and more entertaining, and he hasn't shied away from playing young players as well.
No, and you can see clearly the difference in style. It's not a massive difference. They're just doing it better. I think Xavi wanted his team to close down quicker and win the ball high up the pitch. He wanted his team to play with a high defensive line. But for some reason, this season, they believe in it and they're doing it better. And it suits Lewandowski. He's got all these younger players running around quickly, chasing about, winning the ball back quickly. If he has to join in, which he does, it's a short 10, 15-metre run as opposed to a 30-metre run, which was often the case last season when he got isolated and he's charging around or not charging around on his own. Everybody's switched on. Everybody's on the same page and it's working. But there are problems with that high defensive line. I mean, they conceded a goal last night from it because they're trying to play offside almost and the player, Edumbo, is in his own half. And it did happen on 2 or 3 occasions when it was 0-0 that Sevilla, out of nowhere, had a break, a counter-attack, and didn't have the ability to finish it off. And Barcelona, in fairness, they're even getting back quicker as well because there was 2 or 3 occasions at 0-0 where Sevilla broke and it's 3 against 3 and it suddenly becomes 6 against 3 in favour of Barcelona. So there's an urgency, you know, more of a conscious effort, I think, to play a slightly different style to Xavi, but the urgency is there for a different manager more than it was under Xavi.
Yeah.
So last night was a comprehensive win. I did imagine it was going to be a comfortable victory for Barcelona due to what we're seeing from Sevilla. It's interesting. 17 months ago, they won the Europa League.
Yeah.
And 11 of the 17, they used 6 subs that night against Roma. Because we went to extra time, 11 of those players have gone.
Yeah, but
and they're on their fourth manager.
Yeah, that the Europa League win was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If they were in a relegation battle. And we'd all written them off for that Europa League, so much so that he didn't
they
even
did.
put his strongest team out for the first Manchester United game.
Manchester United.
Yeah.
They rested the players to play a more important league game against Valencia, won that, and then Mendilibar thought, oh, we're going to be safe now.
Decent
team in the second league.
And we thought the squad needed a lot of change to it because they had loads of old players, didn't they?
Yeah.
It's just that the much vaunted Monchi left them in a really bad place. And how much of that is? I mean, I think he has to hold his share of the blame. But obviously, I think the succession style civil war in the club obviously is making it a difficult place to work, isn't it?
Yeah. But I looked at that team the team that won the Europa League. The only player that was worth any money was Enesiri. They only got 20 million for him in the end.
Yeah.
And they should have got more. They paid 20 million for him.
Mm.
And he did. Well, you look at the team last night, you're thinking he's a massive miss. But the rest of them were all Acuna, Bono, Fernando, Rakitic, Jordan, Lamela. They're a very good set of players, aging. 38 league games, but could lift it for a cup competition, lift their performance for a cup competition, but none of them add any value in the transfer market. So all those players that have left, they barely received any money for them. They were happy to get them off the wage bill, but there's no income.
Yeah, no long-term planning then, is there? Do you keep having to sign good old player and you keep having to get it right every single season if you rebuild it? Because they end up rebuilding like the clubs at the bottom end of La Liga have always had to do.
Yes, exactly. Peque is the big investment this year, 4 million from Racing Santander. Then they're getting players on loan from Brighton and Arsenal. And I guess Saul is a big loss at the moment, coming in on loan from Atletico Madrid. But they're not in a good position.
Yeah.
Far from it. And I still see them, and the win against Betis lifted the spirits. And I liked what Garcia Pimienta is doing. He's adapted to the group of players he's got. He's not been stubborn and playing his own brand and style of football and making things worse. Barcelona away is one of those games where that's not the competition they're in anymore. But it'd be interesting to see the reaction to the heavy defeat. Azuke has been fabulous. Free transfer. They picked him up from CSKA Moscow. He's been fabulous. He's going to be injured for a while. So that's a big loss as well. And Suso came back from injury, came on and went off injured again.
Mm.
So he's one of the few remaining players that's still at the club from that success.
Yeah.
I think Suso, Navas, who's not playing. Gudelia is one of them that's still there. Bade was playing. But you just look and you think there's four managers. They're on their fourth manager in 17 months.
Yeah.
And a completely new squad that bears no resemblance in terms of quality to the Sevilla teams that we've seen in the past. So it's going to be a struggle this season for Sevilla, massive struggle.
Atletico Madrid, every game is a struggle for Atletico Madrid. But once again, they won. Once again, you look at the league table and it's not a disastrous situation. They were losing against Leganés, to be fair, to an absolute cracker of a goal.
Oh, wonderful goal.
Yeah. And then, 17 substitutions and 43 tactical changes later.
And the big lad.
Yeah,
gets him back in it. Lego is Nayu with a wonderful strike.
And yeah, then
you're thinking that's 34 minutes. Oh, that's a blow. That's a surprise. And it continued for quite a while. Solov does get the equaliser with 20 just over 20 minutes to go. Then they run away with it. It does take a lot for a team like Leganés to stick in there and try and hold on to a lead and to. When Atleti have got so many good players that can come off the bench, and it's, but that they do make life difficult for themselves, Atletico. Sorloth, the just to see him on the pitch that late on scoring goals and not being dragged off is a benefit. So,
yeah, it's interesting. It's so because I don't have an obvious solution.
Off the bench. Again, there's been a number of South Americans. It seems to be the new thing this week. If you play in the South American World Cup qualifier, you're not playing it.
Yeah.
Which in the past has never been the case, but it does appear it now.
Yeah, but it makes sense.
Play for Real Madrid.
Yeah. It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's a new thing.
Yeah, but new things are okay. You know, we remain open minded to new things.
Well, Messi used to get the hump if he came back and didn't play for Barcelona. I know
yeah, yeah.
Suarez and Neymar and all the other.
But the FIFA virus was a thing as well, wasn't it? Big clubs did struggle after the international breaks.
Fede Valverde came back. There was rumours he was going to play. He was brilliant again.
Yeah,
but Rodrigo was rested. So I just wonder how the players feel.
Yeah, but you know,
James Rodriguez still can't get a game for Rio.
That's a different matter, however. But the whole kind of is too much football.
Why is that a different matter?
So it's just a different. That's different. James, Rio not picking James to the big clubs rotating. The big clubs should rotate. They constantly complain that they it's too many games, we're all getting injured, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, if they leave a player out, everyone is outraged. And you think, well, surely you've got to go through. How many games are these clubs going to play? Atleti, Real Madrid, Barcelona, 60 games maybe this season. So you've got to rest players.
I guess it is the right time after travelling across to.
Yeah. And you would have thought against Leganés, home to Leganés,
I can rest.
Rest some players against
Rodrigo. The ball was rested. Alvarez.
Yeah. Yes, I'm not justifying James not getting a game at Rio. I can't explain that one for you. Right. So let's move on. Right. I'm going to ask you a quiz question. Which Spanish team is the worst in terms of conceding XG against this season in all the top five all the top five European leagues?
Ooh. I don't know that.
Right. Let me tell you, they conceded four against Athletic this weekend. So Espanyol.
I've got another stat for Espanyol as well.
Oh, yeah. Go on.
They achieved on Saturday their eighth offside of the season in 10 games. Eighth offside in 10 games.
That would be like 45 minutes.
My eye this week and I started breaking down. Villarreal are the most caught offside team in La Liga.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't checked yesterday's total, but they were 28, I think, and Espanyol were on seven after nine games.
Right.
I'm thinking, and it's interesting how people perceive that. My impression straight away was, that's a joke. I used to get offside seven times a game.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and the offside laws were different back then. But there's no threat in behind if you're getting caught. There was once, they got caught once against Athletic Club, so made eight in 10 games. So it just, to me, it sets a pattern. Villarreal, obviously, with 28, are trying to make runs in behind. You will get caught offside. If you're that type of striker, you're thinking, the next one, I've got a free run in. You know, Sevilla last night scored a goal from in their own half because the player makes the run deep. But you've got to make that run to threaten in behind. So that was my stat this week that caught my eye. And, you know, everyone knows I'm such a guru on stats, and I love the stats. but it did catch my eye, and I thought, I wonder how, you know, you can see how a team plays. Like Barcelona and Real Madrid won't get caught offside a lot because teams defend deep, so they're having possession in the attacking half. But a team like Espanyol, who play counter-attacking football, they'll have to do it home and away against better teams. If you're barely ever getting caught offside because you're not making those runs in behind and on counter-attack, you can ask problems. So what was their XG? They're the worst XG in
all top five European leagues. They've conceded, basically giving up the most chances than everybody else anywhere.
They're not looking good.
No.
Manolo Gonzalez, but I thought was doing a decent job.
Yeah.
At home, they're better. That's clear.
Yeah.
And most of their points are going to come at home. But I won't be too critical of them in this game. They were outplayed by a team that were in fantastic form.
Yeah.
Probably my most enjoyable team performance of the weekend was Athletic Club, because they lined up and you're thinking, there's no centre and you've got both Williams brothers, Guruzeta and Berenguer. So who's going to play in the centre position? The answer was all of them did. And that position, the number 10 position in general, caused Espanyol so many problems. One minute it was Iñaki, one minute it was Nico, one minute it was Berenguer, then it was Guruzeta and someone else was playing up front. The fluidity between that front four. Valverde, he's obviously seen something, and that's given him real food for thought, because Sanchez is a wonderful player. But these four, it's dynamic. They were quick. They had great understanding. And they, the Athletic Club in this game were brilliant. You know, Berenguer played in all different positions and was fantastic. And Iñaki Williams was on fire.
Yeah. So Iñaki Williams, the traditional view of it, I'm scrolling through the stats now as you're talking to me. The traditional view of him was that he couldn't finish his dinner, but the one, I can't remember if it's first, which one of his goals, he took it brilliantly, didn't he? Where he
goal and turn finish.
Yeah, where he sort of steps
second
in.
Second one was good as well.
Yeah.
Angled, rifled it into the top corner.
So I'm just looking at his, see if his finishing stats have improved over the years or not.
My belief is it's helped him by not being the centre forward.
Right, yeah.
Permanently.
Yeah.
You know, playing up front and being the go-to man. You're the player to replace Llorente and Adder is, you know, you're the one where you've got to score 15 to 20 goals. The pressure is on you as the centre forward. My belief is that because of Guruzeta coming along and taking on that role, it's allowed Iñaki Williams to play central sometimes, wide sometimes, drop deep, run with the ball. He's not expected to score more than 10 goals a year.
Yeah.
And he'll do that. And
yeah.
Fulfill everyone's expectations and make loads of goals and just be an all-round fantastic player. I think he's fabulous.
Yeah. His stats are fairly undramatic, actually. He's got a mild positive this season on his finishing. Last season was plus 2.6, which is okay. Every season previously was a mild negative, except 21-22 season when he was really bad with his finishing. So he's not that, they're not remarkable stats. The rest of his game is what's remarkable, isn't it? And his finishing is, it would seem,
ability,
okay.
Availability.
Yeah.
And he's just an all-round good character.
Yeah.
You know, his personality rubs off on other players at Athletic Club. Obviously, the relationship with his brother, two different players. But at the weekend, it was just, I was thrilled watching them.
Yeah.
They were fabulous at the weekend. And the battle for the top four is up for grabs. You know, Real Sociedad are tall in a bit, but Athletic Club and Villarreal and Mallorca, we can't rule them out of it. Athletic were superb in this match. So I wouldn't be too critical of Espanyol. The team are going to struggle away from home. They're playing against the better team away from home. Danny Vivian, it doesn't help when you can see the goal from a corner. People would look and go, oh, he's not being marked. He was marked. Sometimes it just happens where you think, well, he's close enough.
Yeah.
But
Stop
every set piece.
Some pundits won't have any, they won't have any saves by goalkeepers being good saves, and they won't have any goals being scored from corners as acceptable. You think, well, if you can never, if that's true, you can just give away as many corners as you like.
Yeah.
And you should be able to defend every single one of them. But you can't, can you? Because like
no.
you say, so you put that ball into the box with a good delivery, it's got a chance of going in then.
Exactly.
In.
So Danny, it was a good finish from Danny Vivian, but that again, similar to the Barcelona Sevilla match, that was then the problem. And then Iñaki scores two in 3 minutes and then Berenguer wraps it up towards the end. So it was, I wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Likewise, again, we're going to be looking at Alaves and Valladolid and maybe Las Palmas and Sevilla and Getafe and, you know, maybe Rayo and things like that as their battle. So Athletic Club were absolutely brilliant in this match.
You were talking about all-round good characters. Chimi Avila got the winning goal for Betis against Osasuna. He got a warm welcome from his old fans.
I wondered why, because he was popular when he was there, but it all went sour at the end. And there is an element, I think, of Osasuna piling it, putting him in trouble with the fans in terms of how he left. I don't think they were too disappointed to see him go, but they didn't want to appear as if they'd moved him out. So they blamed it all on Chimi playing up and wanting to leave and desperate to leave. So, because that day as Azuli comes on and gets a round of applause from the Osasuna fans. I know he was on loan. So Chimi coming off the bench, it was interesting actually. The football aspect of it. This was the best I've seen Betis this season, and no Lo Celso.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And the best it was because they played two up front. Vitor Roque and Bakambu, and Vitor Roque was actually slightly deeper, and they were fabulous. At halftime, they're only 1-0 ahead. It could have been 3 or 4 by 30 minutes. And the problem in that game, and I'm looking at it and thinking, Osasuna are going to improve. They improved just before the halftime break. And I'm looking at it and thinking, you might get punished for not being 3 or 4 goals up. And they got away with it in the end. But the second half was a lot closer. And until Chimi popped up, and it was going to happen. I mean, he hasn't scored too many for Betis, but you just knew when he came off the bench, you got such a boo and such a hostile reception that the personality that he is, if a ball was going to fall to set anybody in the penalty box that day, it was going to be Chimi Ávila.
Yes.
So they did get the win, much needed win, but it must, again, give Pellegrini some issues about, you know, how he's going to line up in the future, because they were clearly the best attacking one. Because we always say the same about Betis, that they knock the ball about, they play well, don't create many chances, and don't take many chances. But in this game, the only fault was they didn't take their chances. But they're playing the two up front, and you got Isco's to come back as well, and then Rochelso. So there's always a lot to look forward to for Betis fans, but for Pellegrini, it's an issue now. How do you play with all those players? Because they clearly look better with two centre forwards at the weekend.
And they're seventh in the league, so that's not bad, is it? No. Right, which other games are we going to do? Oh, Villarreal against Getafe. So points drop this one. Controversial. We've got a couple of controversial refereeing decisions to get to. Football managers are so biased, aren't they? Because Bordalás afterwards, oh, it's an obvious penalty, he was saying in his interviews. It wasn't an obvious. You can just about make a case for it.
I thought it was a pen.
Did you?
Yeah, right. Maybe it's the centre forward in me that.
Yeah.
If you get slapped in the face from a centre half and the ball's nowhere near, happened every game.
Right. Yeah.
Never given. There was no foul, so it.
So, describe what's happened.
Defenders are running back towards goal and then a counter-attack. How many times you see them just pull someone down and the play continues and there's one player less in the penalty box because the defenders dragged him down 40 yards from goal and thrown him to the floor. All those little things that used to bug me, I'm glad that the big ugly centre-backs are getting punished now for being bullies. So Alvio, with all his experience, why is he swinging his arm around on Yildirim when the play is nowhere near them? The cross isn't going to reach them. It's just daft.
My interpretation of it was that he's just jockeying for position.
Yeah.
He does catch him in the face, but if you,
there we go. That's my point.
But if you give a penalty every time someone gets caught by a flailing arm in a penalty area, we're giving a lot of penalties.
That's my point.
Yes, you want lots of penalties.
But I promise you, it was no fun running towards to try to. Oh, we're on the counter attack. Ball's going out on the left wing. We're sprinting towards goal, and a big centre half elbows you in the face, 30 yards from goal, and the referee goes, "Oh, yeah, but ball was nowhere near. Get on with it." No, right. I'm all for that being punished.
Right, good.
So I'm in favour. No problem at all.
Right, okay.
That's stupid for
me. No, let me put this question to you then. Why not send him off then? If he's deliberately punched him in the face.
I'd send him all off. Ban him for 10 games as well. Right. No, joking aside.
Because if it's no... My point is, if you see it...
Violent, conduct.
Because obviously, you're not allowed to just punch somebody and say, well, the ball was nowhere near. I'm allowed to punch him. It's a red card, isn't it? And then you would restart. The rule is you would restart play with a free kick. So you would then... Yeah, so if you're then saying, Albiol, it's not just the cut and thrust of two players jockeying for a space and trying to find...
There's no need for Albiol to do it because the ball's nowhere near and the cross is not going anywhere near them.
He's just trying to grab hold of him, though, isn't he? And just find out where he is and flail his, have a wave of his arm behind him.
He does catch him.
Yeah.
And it's not one of those where he touches him in the chest and the player goes down holding his face. He catches him in the face. It's one of those where, what's this for? You see the replay, you see a couple of different angles. There's no need for LBO to throw his arms out there, irrespective of whether he's trying to find contact and jostling.
Yeah.
I think he does throw the arm a little bit to the side to give him a clump. And as long as LBO's been playing for the majority of his career, that's been acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting away with that, no VAR, so it wouldn't have been picked up. And other referees probably think, oh, it's part and parcel of the game. And I don't think it should be.
Rest of the game?
Hatafe, every time I look at Hatafe, I think, oh, they're one. But they always seem to be playing someone good, away from home. And they always seem to be in the game. They're competitive. They don't concede many goals. They're not particularly scoring many goals. And I'm delighted that Aaron Parry is back. I mean, we probably didn't touch on Gavi enough when he in the Barcelona chat. So a long-term injury, a player who's had long-term injury issues, Aaron Parry, I think it's his fourth goal of the season. I'm glad to see him back. I didn't think he was going to make it. He kept having recurring injuries and stuff like that. And I thought it was going to be an issue. So I'm glad he's back and he's an important player. And likewise, Gavi, we probably didn't meant to talk about Gavi enough, that I think he's a month ahead of schedule. I joked, let's see how long it takes him to make a tackle. I didn't have the clock on it, but it was less than 30 seconds before he steamed into his first challenge. The mentality of players is so important. You've got to be like a warrior when you come back from those long-term injuries, because I suffered them. And the mentality is, Frankie de Jong is totally different. He's nervous. He's apprehensive. Mm-hmm. And I get that. That happens with my first surgery. You come back, you think silly things. You're, can I slide tackle with this big scar on my knee? Will it open up against stupid things? If I get a tackle, is the joint going to go again? Is the ligament going to go again? You have to fight through that. Frankie de Jong apparently admits that he's finding that difficult at the moment, because the last two tackles he's made, his ankle's gone. So but Gavi is a different mentality. He's probably been flying in the tackles in training sessions, and the first act he did last night was steam into a tackle, give away a foul, and probably should have got a yellow card. So his mentality is going to be different. I was really surprised when he came on. So long-term injuries, when they come back, hats off to them all, to be honest.
Yeah.
And Aaron Parry is that player for Hatafe.
Mallorca beat Rayo Vallecano by a goal to nil. Rayo didn't seem to be aware that the idea of chucking the ball up to Marici might be a tactic that Mallorca would use.
Amazing, isn't it? That the goal, it's like they just empty out that area of the delivery. The set piece is coming into the box and it's just empty. And Marici, free header from 6 yards out. And it wasn't the first time it happened either. So I have no idea what Nico Perez was thinking, what his defenders were thinking. You just surely just go, well, he's the threat. They do have big central defenders as well, but Marici's the one said, Lejeune, that's your job. Mark him, don't let him go of him. Maybe put two on him. I mean, it's that much of a threat. One in front, one behind. You know, make sure that he doesn't get a free header. For him to get a complete free header from a corner, 6 yards out, he probably couldn't believe his luck. So, but Mallorca are firing on all cylinders and ticking away nicely, playing a similar style to what they did under Aguirre, but, you know, with slightly different tactical tweaks from Arasati. And they're playing with confidence. They're good at home. They do have a player that can make a difference. Cole Lowry's a handful as well. So why not play to your strengths? And the Mallorca putting together a good run of results and sixth position, 17 points, which isn't probably far off. I mean, last year they struggled, suffered, great cup run. I'm guessing they didn't get, I'm guessing they've already got nearly half the amount of points they got last season.
Yeah.
In a whole campaign. So excellent start from Arasati and Mallorca.
Right. James got, half an hour? So he played virtually two full games for Colombia. So there's obviously nothing wrong with him. He played 13 minutes against Valladolid. He played 63 against Leganés, stayed on the bench against Girona, 17 against Atleti, 3 against Osasuna, etc., etc. Why?
Impressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he came to Rayo on the back of playing well in the Copa America and He's played other qualifiers as well for Colombia and scored a goal against Brazil. And now he finds himself third choice at Rio behind Issy Palazón and Oscar Trejo.
Yeah.
And maybe this is the only one I can, as you talked about, the travelling and the
so this game, fair enough.
But he started one game, played well, and then was the game a week later.
Yeah.
And then now still on the bench. Nico Perez has to be careful because it's such a popular signing.
Mm.
And you just can't, as a manager, you're causing yourself problems.
Yeah.
They don't need to be there. And Rio are doing all right, 13 points, ninth position, no complaints about their achievements so far this season. But don't give yourself added problems by leaving out a star player.
Right. So actually, really good game. Alaves 2, Valladolid 3 on Friday night. Valladolid actually created a lot, didn't they? But they scored two penalties. But one of the decision to give the handball against Reading.
Ludicrous.
Yeah. It was just insane, wasn't it? To the extent where
they remained so calm. He did, didn't he?
Yeah. Because you think, when I watched that, I didn't watch that game live. So I knew there was a penalty, but I didn't know, even when I watched it, I didn't know that was the penalty. Yeah. So I was thinking, who's accused of handball there? Because they all jump, and I don't know who the player was behind him, but he heads it. It's one of these ones where you're not even looking because the ball's gone over. He gets headed against maybe his arm, maybe his shoulder.
Maybe his
No distance, literally the guy behind him has just headed it. And you think,
and his arm is down by his side. It's not outstretched.
Yeah, it's not a wild.
He's jumping. I can't see any proof that it was handball.
No, yeah.
No proof whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so there's no intention. And you're right, Guridi was restrained. I'm amazed the VAR looked at it and still gave it.
Yeah.
So that was astonishing.
Yeah, and then Kike Garcia.
One the week before, but Llorente's arm was slightly out.
Yeah, yeah.
Against Sevilla.
Yeah, I still don't think that's a pen, but this one is
ridiculous decision.
When you look at it and you can't even, it doesn't even occur to you who's the guilty party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then be a penalty.
Yeah, so, and then Kike Garcia had a brief, but impactful time in the game.
Yeah, the impact. Yeah. I mean, it's Kike Garcia. Tony Martinez is starting up front. He's doing all right. Scored a good goal to put them 1-0 up. Silla gets the first penalty, so that ties it up. And then they get another penalty as well, don't they? Severo, the goalkeeper, gives away the first one. And Mahler takes the penalty from the handball of Guridi to put them 2-1 up. And while then puts them 3-1 up away from home, celebrating. Kike Garcia comes on. It's a hopeless lost cause. He scores an absolute worldie goal in the 97th minute and then picks up two yellow cards. And again, it was one of those with the dissent. They've sent the goalkeeper up. It's the last ditch attempt. The ball's gone in the box. Provided the defender's gone down, there's no foul. It's just an attempt to. We're under pressure here. We're hanging on for dear life. I'll drop to the ground, bit of shoulder contact. There's contact in the penalty box, but no arms being thrown. Referee buys it and gives the foul, which pretty much ends the game because the game stopped. It's going to be a free kick to Valladolid. It was the 99th minute, 8-9 minutes added on. And the Kike Garcia just says something to the referee, and the referee almost looks as if the referee says to him, "You what? Pardon?" And he repeats it, but it's not in his face arguing. So he got the first yellow and the second yellow. And I was just going, it was brilliant when it came on. Tony Martinez is doing well. But when Kike Garcia come on, and Alaves need they need to galvanise themselves. They started well this season. They've fallen off now. They've had some difficult games, but they don't want to be losing matches like this at home to Valladolid. A little demonstration again from the only supporters that seem to demonstrate that they're always playing on a Friday or a Monday.
Yeah.
They make their feelings known that, they shouldn't have to be the team that plays every game on a Friday or a Monday night. And it's fair enough.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Girona lost again. slap bang mid-table. Real Sociedad needed, well, I don't want to over-exaggerate it, but it's a very useful win for Real Sociedad.
Girona, and he said Girona. There's so many issues. I mean, they've lost a lot of players, and now they've got a massive injury list as well. So I really do feel for Michel.
Yeah.
I do that. You know, I can understand why he stayed at the club. I'm sure he had other opportunities after doing what he did last season. I wonder if he was given them reassurances that haven't come true because, you know, the players left were fantastic. The new ones that come in, some are okay, but they're not the standard that left. And now he's got a long, long injury list. And in saying that, they were much better than I thought they were going to be. And this could have gone either way. It really could. Chances were even, possession was even, and because Michel is such a good coach, you still recognise, despite the fact so many players have gone, so many players are missing through injury, it still looks like a Girona performance. So they were unlucky in this, and Oyarzabal does get his first goal since scoring the winner against England in the European Championship. So it was a hard-fought victory for Real Sociedad. They'd be delighted. Aguasil, you know, made lots of changes again. He's chopping and changing things, trying to... No Take Kubo this week, no Geraldo Becker. It was, you know, a few changes to try and freshen up their attacking lineup. Oscarsson should have scored a couple. Could have gone either way. Probably draw would have been a fair result by Isabel, but nicely taken head. Got all 3 points for Lareal.
And it's the old European classic, Girona against Slovan Bratislava in the Champions League.
It's tough because he's running out of players. I mean, the injury list is significant. Brian Hill was the latest one. Asprilla missed the game as well, and he's been one of the better signings. Now Paul Too, he's got a long-term injury. Romeo is out. Sigankov, Daley Blind. It's tough to take at the moment yeah. for Michel. That's their big game to win.
Yeah.
Girona, because I think they've got, after that, a couple of big hitters.
Mm. Yeah.
So they need to get a win to lift morale. Otherwise, if they don't and they lose all the first three games, and then I think they've got Liverpool, I'm not sure, coming up. I think the next two or three games were against big hitters, Bayern Munich, Liverpool, Juventus, something like that, that you thought, oh, no. So it's tough on Michel at the moment.
A big game tonight is Valencia against Las Palmas. New manager in charge of Las Palmas, who is Diego Martinez, who's been around a long time, of course. And it'll be, I heard Albert Ferreira at the weekend just casting doubt on the appointment, which was an interesting one, just in terms of he doesn't fit. So, but sometimes you do need to change. And probably when you're bottom of the league, it's probably when you need to change.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I watched that back to see what Albert do like his opinions. I think probably not a good fit is a good thing for Las Palmas.
Yeah, yeah.
If that makes any sense, that to carry on playing the same way they have been playing for the last year.
Yeah.
And not win a game.
Mm. Yeah.
It probably is a good choice. Not a good,
yeah.
We need someone just like the last manager and the other manager before that, where we haven't won for nearly 30 matches. Where can we find someone like that? So, no, it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
My worry is Ruben Baraja, last game against Leganés, they were happy to play for a 0-0 draw.
Yeah.
I think Guy might be back from injury. Talisman gives them a boost. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to this game.
Yeah, big game. Right, and we'll be back to look at the European games and this game later in the week with the Patreons. Thank you. If you want to pick up a Patreon, patreon.com/ltel. And thank you to the Patreons. Thank you to everybody for listening, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.